So, gentlemen, we start a new sugya today. It's a sugya that combines many different parts of Masechta Nidah. And my goal for today is to touch on some of the sources, only in a limited, a pinpoint way, and then, Mirtz Hashem, later on, maybe next week, we'll get a chance to look at some of these sources, be'iyun inside, and see them slowly. The Tosus at the beginning of Masechta Nida asks the following question. And this you'll see four lines down, or three lines down from the top of Tosus. V'im Tomar.
Where? What page is it?
Nida Daf Beis Amud Aleph. The first Tosus in the Masechta. And we'll come back to the Rosh and Mirtz Hashem a little bit later. So let's just give a little background. The Mishnah records a three-way machlokes about a woman who was osekes betaros, and then subsequently she had a re'ias dam. According to Beit Shammai, according to Shammai, dayan shaita, we don't have to worry about any taharos that she had contact with prior. According to Beis Hillel, we go back and we bring the Mitame, according to Hillel, Mitame, the Taros that she had his Askus with, back to the previous Bedika, the last Bedika that she made. That's called Mipkida Lepkida. And the Chachamim are of the opinion of the Ace Le'ace that we assume that there may be Dam that was held up in the Beis Achitzon for a 24-hour period, and therefore, Lechumra, we have to be metame all the taros l'mafreya 24 hours. So basically what we have here is a case of safek tuma. What I mean to say is that we know that now she saw, she has a vadei re'ia, so she's tmeya vadois. We don't know about the previous time, whether it be 24 hours earlier, etc., etc. So Tosa says we have a safek tuma. Now, with regard to Sofek Tuma, the Gemara here on Daf Gimel and elsewhere in Masechta Sota derives the principles of what's called Rishuyos. Rishuyos means that if, let's say, I don't know if I came in contact with the Sheretz or I didn't come in contact with the Sheretz, so do we say Sofek Tuma Lahachmir and we assume that I was Tomei, or do we say Sofek Tuma Latayer? And the answer is depends on where the suffix was nolad. If the suffix took place in Rishus HaRabim, then suffix tar. And that means that even if you have only one suffix of 50-50, it still is tar. If it was Rishus HaYachid, then kol sveikas atayochel harbos, you could have one suffix and another suffix and another suffix, you could have robes, you could add anything you want to the pot. It's all going to be what? Tameh. And that's something that we derive from Sota. Sota is going to be a Sofek Tumah Rishus HaYachid, and therefore Sfeiko Tomei. So given that background, we're ready for Tosus's Kasha. V'im Tomer Maishnah, why is our Mishnah dealing with anything that's different than the universal rules of Sofek Tumah? Mikol Sofek Tumah, the Rishus HaYachid Tomei, that if the Sofek was nolad in Rishus HaYachid, which, by the way, in all likelihood, that's going to be the case because a woman was osekes petaros, not out in the shuk. I mean, again, you could imagine such a scenario, but generally in a private, you know, reshus that's surrounded by four machitos, it's a classical reshus ayochid. And therefore, we should say safek tome. Now, again, there are many parts of this tosis which are important, but not directly germane. So I'm gonna pinpoint what I think is most important for us. Tosus offers two answers to this very fundamental question. His first answer is, which you'll see, approximately 10 lines down from the top of Yesh Lomar, Delo Yalfinan Misota Litama Limafrea. Tosus says the following. That the whole issue of tumah, of sofek tumah, which we derive from sota, is mikan ulahava. We want to know if a person contracted tumah from the moment of the sofek and onwards. There's no There's no diyun, there's no issue about l'mafre retroactive. Mashein came here in this discussion, the three-way machlokas in our Mishnah at the beginning of Nida, we're dealing with a suffix l'mafre. And Sota and all the derivations thereof have nothing to tell us about l'mafreya. That's the first answer of Tosfos. So again, just to summarize, Tosfos is saying that if you're dealing with a suffix that's relevant to retroactive, to a previous period of time, that's not to be equated with Sota and the principles of suffix tumbrishus arabim, suffix tumbrishus yachid. The latter, those principles apply mikan ulahaba from now and on, but not l'mafreya. And therefore, suffix tuma b'rishus hayachid sveiko tome has nothing to say to us about l'mafreya. It doesn't have the power to establish a tuma l'mafreya. Then, if you fast forward, Tosis gives another answer. This is way later on, and Tosis says, he says that in this case, came unto Ika Reusa Migufa, it's the beginning of the wide lines, not the very wide lines, but I'd say the middle wide lines, because Tosis here is like a ladder, you know. He says that in the case of Sota and Sufik Tumah Rishus HaYachid Rishus HaRabim classic, we don't know whether he contracted Tumah or not. Was he no Geir B'Sheretz? Was it a sheretz? Was it a tzfardea? What was it? We have all sorts of sfeikas. Mashein came here, she had a re'iyah. There's no doubt about it that she had a riyas nida, and therefore she's tmeah. You want to know when exactly in time she became tmeah? When did she contract that tumor? That says Tosfos has nothing to do with Sota. Sota's can only talk to you about, was there tumor or was there not tumor? Did he have any gear? Did he not have a gear? Was there a tumor or not? That's what we derive, the principles of Rishuyos, Shusayok, Rishusarab. However, with regard to a case where she's Vade Tmeo, you just want to know at what point in time did she contract that tumor? Was it today? Was it yesterday? Was it 5 days ago after she made her last Bedika? When was it? So that Sota doesn't tell us anything about. Now, here's the question that we want to raise. What happens if we're not interested in asking the question, well, when did she contract the tumor? Was it before the re'iyah? Was the dam held up in the Beis HaChitzon? Or was it only b'shas re'iyah of the Eluk? Let's not ask that question. Let's ask a different question. We know that she had a re'iyah at time T1. She continues to see. At what point can I assume that she stopped seeing? In other words, here the suffix is not l'mafreya. The suffix is masai paska miliros. At what point did she stop? Did she terminate her re'iyah?
I understand the question.
Okay. Here's the question. Normally, if a woman wants to change her status from Tmeya to Tahora, she has to, I shouldn't say normally, leave out the word normally. Let me start the sentence again, sorry. When a woman wants to change her status from Tuma to Tara, she needs two things, X and Y. Y is the Tefillah B'Mikvah. Okay, but before Y, before she goes to Mikvah, what she needs first and foremost is she has to stop seeing. In the case of a Zohar Gdol, she has to stop seeing for a period of 7 days. That's called Zayin Nikiyim. In the case of Nida, as soon as the 7 days terminate and she's no longer seeing Dam, she's already prepared for Tefillah B'Mikvah. But what happens if we have a Sofek, whether or not she's continuing to see? Let's say, I'll give you the following scenario. Again, it can come up in many different ways. Yeah, go ahead, Shalom.
Continue to see or continue to look?
Well, let's say she's not looking, right? She wasn't looking for whatever reason. She didn't make what's called a bedika, correct? And we had many different scenarios where a woman did not make a bedika, or she made a bedika of kinuach, not a bedika of charenustak, whatever the various permutations are. But let's leave aside bedika. It's a non-issue at this point. Yeah, just make believe bedika is not on the horizon. Now my question is, did she stop seeing or did she not stop seeing? And I have no proof because she didn't make a bidik. Can I say in this case that whether or not she stopped seeing, which is my issue, should be dependent upon the classical universal halachas of Sofek? In which case we could derive from Sota that the law of Rishuyos reigns prominent and determines the Sofi. Rishus HaYochid Tomei, Rishus HaRabim Tor. For example, let's say I can prove to you that this woman sees generally for a period of 5 days. We're up to day 6. Can I now assume on day 6 that she stops seeing? Well, the Torah says, Achrei Rabim Lahatos. The Torah says, rely on Rov. But if I view this as a Sofek Tumah, and let's introduce Rishus HaYochid here, in Rishus HaYochid there is no din of Rov. The Torah says, and this we derive from Sota, that Sofek Tumah, Rishus HaYochid, Kol Sveikas HaTayoch LaHarbos, the Svek Sveikas and the Rovs, is doesn't matter, doesn't register one iota. It's all going to be Sveiko Tumah. So I don't know, did he touch the animal? Was the animal a sheretz? I don't know, was it a Dom Ramatami? Was it not? I can keep piling on sveikas. You know, did he go into the sada? Did he not go into the sada? If he went in, did he touch? What did he touch? Was it Tzvardeh? It doesn't matter. If it was Rishus HaYochid, let's say you had a very large sada, you know, then all the sveikas and all the robes all go down the tubes. It's Sveiko Tomei. Here in this case, getting back to the case of Isha Sharoa Dam, the Rov will tell me that Poskaliros, that she no longer sees. Correct? That's her biological system. Can I rely on that Rov? Can I now send her to the mikvah and say that she can be Tara herself? Because Poskaliros, if it's a case of Nida, if it's a case of Zoma, she'll have to count another 7 days, whatever it might be, but we're going to send her to the mikvah based on Rov. So the answer is, maybe in this case we're not going to rely on Rov, because maybe in this case it was a Sofek Bershus HaYochid. And assuming it was Bershus HaYochid, again, it could always change, but if it was Bershus HaYochid, which is a fair premise, then Kol Sfeikas, no matter how many Sfeikas you add to the picture, no matter how many Rovs and Chazokas, whatever you want to add, is Sfeiko Tomei. Tosas says, well, let's derive from Sota the principles that should determine our Mishnah at the beginning of Masechta Nida. Tosas says, no, we can't do that. Because there, in our Mishnah in Masechta Nida, we're dealing with the Mafreya. Or, for example, we want to know at what point she became Tomei. She became Tomei. And that Sota can't talk to me about. But now I talk to you about a case where I'm not asking about the Mafreya. I'm not asking you at what point in time she became Tmeya. My suffix is, did she continue to be Tmeya? In this case, go ahead, Rabbi.
If she never does a Bedika, she remains Tmeya forever, theoretically.
So, again, I don't know what I said on, what's today, Wednesday, what I said on Monday. So, because yesterday I gave a shiur to the Kol, so I get a little confused what we said and what we didn't say. But what I meant to say, if I didn't say it on Monday,
you could have said it.
Yeah, is that Sofek. Right, Sofek, right? Yeah, is that the Sidrei Tara quotes a very early posek by the name of the Zichron Yosef. I did say it. And the Zichron Yosef says, forget about Bedika, leave out Bedika. I can substitute for her Bedika a Rov. The Torah says rely on Rov. In most cases, she sees 5 days, she sees 6 days, whatever it might be. She herself knows that she never sees, I shouldn't say never, but hardly ever, right? Sees beyond day 5, day 6. When we come to day 7, says the Zichron Yosef, the Torah relies on Rov. But wait a second, what do you mean the Torah relies on Rov? Hold everything. We're talking about a Sofek Tumah versus HaYochid, assuming. If it's versus HaYochid, Rov is not going to tell me a thing. So the Sidrei Tara, who's my original source for the Zichron Yosef, because Yechiel hasn't been around lately, I'm hoping that, you know, he has a magical touch when it comes to the internet. I'm hoping he'll find the Zichron Yosef for me. It's hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but I'm hoping that in one of these Otzer Chachmas or so he'll find it. But in the meantime, all I have in front of me is the Sidrei Tara. The Sidrei Tara quotes the Zichron Yosef as saying, you know what, maybe we don't have to get so concerned and all caught up with this Hefsek Tara business because we have a Rov. And the Sidrei Tara wants to rely on the Zichron Yosef in a case of a woman who can't make a Bedikas Chorin who stuck him, and she can only make a Bedikas Kinuach. Do you remember this? Is this ringing a bell? And all that is based on the Zichron Yosef. But then, after presenting this whole beautiful structure, beautiful thesis that has tremendous repercussions, the Sidrei Tara quotes another piece from the Zichron Yosef. And the Zichron Yosef, the same author of the Rove, of Derech Klal Regilus that she only sees for 5 days, and therefore don't get all hung up about this, about the Bedika and the Hefsek Tara, the same author, the Zichron Yosef, says, B'makom, b'chol makom, she'yesh safek ala isha, im paska liros, im lo paska liros. And she can't make a Hefsek Tara, for whatever reason. He says, Nelif misota, lomar, shetmea bivadai, v'lo yahani boshum din rovo sveksvekis, kevan shu safek tum v'shus ayoch. So that again, you know, it's like, who mosif love, who mafarik love. You know, with one hand, the Zichron Yosef gave us a, you know, offered us a piece of luscious candy to eat, you know, and we all got excited about it. Here's a rove that could completely supplant the necessity for Hefsek Tara, which is going to be a great cooler in many, many scenarios where a woman can't make the Hefsek Tara that we want her to make, namely the Chorin who's stuck in. And then he takes away the candy from us, and he pulls it back, and he says, oh, no, no, no. Let's go back to Tosis. Let's go back to basics. Safek Tuma Bershus Hayach is Sveiko Tame. Says Tosis, we can't apply that principle and derive anything from Sota, classic Safek Tuma Bershus Hayach, to Nida, because we're dealing with Luma Freya. We're dealing with the question of, did she contract Tuma? Did she contract Tuma? No, we know that she contracted Tuma. That's not the case of Safek Tuma. Says the Zichron Yosef, but if we know that she contracted Tuma, we're not interested in that Lama Freya. We want to know, is she still being Motzi Adam, and therefore she can or cannot go to the mikvah, or cannot begin to count Zayin Nikiyim? That's already a classic Safek Tuma v'shus Hayachid. And Tosus never denied that the fundamental principle is that the din of Rishuyos, which are Koveya, the Sveikis and Tuma, apply, all those principles apply here to Nida. That was never an issue for Tosus. Nida is Tumas Nida, like any Tuma. Narvas, the only question is that here we have different issues. But if we had the same classical issue, then for sure the halach would be determined by the principles that govern Tumah in general. Says the Zichron Yosef, forget about Rov. She may tell you, you know, she can stand on her head and swear in a stack of Bibles that she never sees beyond day 5, day 6, and day 7 for sure she stops seeing. That's not going to do it for us, because we still are Bechlal HaSofek, and no matter what robes you put into it, the principle is Sofek Tumah Bershus HaYochid Sveiko Tumah. Well, just one second. Before you ask questions, I just want to, just so that I don't lose my trend, I just want to ask one question. I'm not going to answer it now, but I just want to throw it out. Did the Sidrei Tara accept the Zichron Yosef, or did he not? So just so that I don't forget where I'm holding, I'm throwing that question out. Okay, now
you can go first.
Which comes first, the eyes or the heart?
Okay, need the heart.
No, go ahead.
The fact that this whole thing in Rishus Hayachid is because she's in the house.
Yeah,
if she was outside, it would go the other way.
Right, but it could be that the moment that she saw the dam, she was inside, and that already determines the suffix as a suffix to Rishus Hayachid, even if she runs outside.
Well, why is that determined the suffix? That's a vaday. That's not a suffix.
No, I'm saying that if later on, a week later, you want to know if she's still seeing Dam,
right?
Machmas, the original Dam that she saw, that's Dam, that's a Sofik Tum v'shus Hayoch. Even if she jumps out into the, you know, into the marketplace. But you know what, Rabbi Goldstein, I don't want to get off on a tangent because
no, you need to know how it works. What makes the Sofik is because day 6 comes, okay?
Right.
Day 6 comes, which she usually doesn't see.
Right.
Okay? Is that the moment of the suffix, or is the moment of the suffix?
I don't know. Again, that's not a question that we... Again, that's not a question that we can sink our teeth into, because first and foremost, we have to sink our teeth into the following question. This is where I want you to put on your thinking caps. The Zichron Yosef, based on Tosfos Bereish Masechta Nida, establishes the following premise. And that's the premise that I want to analyze with you. And that's the premise that the Sidri Torah is going to investigate with a microscope. The premise of the Zichron Yaakov is that Enoch Inami, we can accept a basic equation between Tumas Nida and Tuma in general, whatever Tuma you want to talk about, Tumas Mes, you want to talk about Tumas Shrotzim, you name it. We have the universal principles that govern Tumah and Sfeikis, which is a Yochim, which is a Rabin, and those apply to Nida as well. Tosis is coming up with the exceptions to the rule, but the rule is that Hayu Tumas Nida, Hayu Shar Tumas. There's no difference between Tumas Nida and any other Tumas. That's the premise that Tosis operates with, so says the Zichron Yosef. El of us, when we come to nitty-gritty, to the grips of what exactly is a suffix, then we might have situations in which Tumas Nida addresses Sfeikis, which we don't find are not surfacing with regard to classical Tumas. For example, we know that she has a Re'iyah, and then the question is, at what point in time did she become Tmeya? That's already a different question. That's not within the purview. But if we have a real suffix, meaning right now, I want to know, is she seeing Dam or is she not seeing Dam? And she is Birshus Hayok. And again, I'm not getting into the question of where she physically is. That you'll have to leave for another time. Says the Zichron Yosef, my premise is, and he claims that that's the premise of Tosfos, we're going to apply the principles of Tumah. Why not? He doesn't even, it never even dawned on him that Tumas Nida might be different than Shar Tumas. And therefore the principle of Sofik Tumah, which is a Yochum Tzvei Kotomi, should apply. Forget about Rov.
It's a Sofik in Mitzius.
Whoa.
In Mitzius?
Yeah.
Every Sofik is a Sofik for Mitzius. Did I touch the Sheretz? Did I not touch the Sheretz? Did I touch the Tzvardea? Did I not touch the Tzvardea? Let's assume that she can't make the Bedika, so it's EF Shalavar. Again, Rabbi, you're trying to strengthen the position of Zichron Yosef. So you're making things worse for me, because what I want to do, that's my agenda for today, is to reject the Zichron Yosef. Because if I don't reject the Zichron Yosef, this is going to have tremendous repercussions. And by the way, what it means that according to the Zichron Yosef, if a person would be Boel her, let's say for example she relied on Rov, and then she went to Mikveh after 7 days, or whatever the case might be, and now somebody was Boel her, according to the Zichron Yosef, he's chayv a karbon chatos if he did it for Shogeg, he's chayv kareis if he did it for Beisim, Malkus with Hayden Varasra, because Tuma Sofik Bish Sayochin is Tmeo B'Torah's Vadai. That's the Chiddush of Sofik Tuma Bish Sayochin. It's one Chiddush to say that, you know what, we'll suspend all the dinim of Hachros that apply Kol Tor Kula, we're going to say we're still a Sofik, and therefore it's Tomei. But it's another thing, and that's what we get from Sota, to say that there's a Tumas Vadai. For example, the Baal is not allowed to live with his wife afterwards. He's going to bust up the Ishus. Based on Halacha of Vadai. If we paskin Halacha of Vadai based on the Zichron Yosef, and we disregard all the Rovs and all the Sveksvekas, that has tremendous repercussions. So the rabbi here, I think, is just making life more bitter for us instead of more sweet for us by saying, well, it's Efshel Avar. You know, why should we even bother with this Sofik? Throw it out because you can make a Bedika and it's Efshel Avar. No! I'm going to say even more than that. Not only is it Efshel Avar, not Efshel Avar, but it's Tuma B'Toras Vada. And the Sidrei Torah is very nervous about this Zichron Yosef. So what does the Sidrei Torah say? Now, this is fascinating to me because one of the contemporaries of the Sidrei Torah was the Ktzos HaChoshen. And the Ktzos HaChoshen, and I think neither of them were aware of what they were both writing in different parts of the world, the Ktzos HaChoshen wrote a book called Shev Shmaitita. Yeah. It's one of the most famous works in the halakhic universe. I remember when when we wanted to test the young man who was claiming that he was a big genius, okay, a young man from Beit Vagan, and we tested him in the Shev Shmaitetah, he knew the entire Sefer by heart, Shaka Vitari, but the Chiddush is, he was 18 years old.
17 when he wrote it.
Yeah, the Shev Shmaitetah, I don't even have to tell you what a genius he was. He was 17, but I'm talking about a boy who today lives in Yerushalayim. Well, now he lives in the Shtachim, but he's a Yerushalayim boy. I know his family for ages. And the boy, as a youngster, knew the entire Shev Shmaitetah, Shakal Vitari of Alpeh. You know, in Shanghai, in the Mir, during the war, they couldn't find the Shev Shmaitetah of Chaim Shmulevitz, took out a pen and wrote the entire Shev Shmaitetah by heart. His nephew, Rabbi Yehuda Shmulevitz, who's the Manal of way at the college where I taught for 2 years, has the original writings. I'd love to know what that's worth on the market, you know what I'm saying? But he's not selling it, that's what he told me. I offered him a couple hundred thousand, but, you know, just joking. The Shev Shmaitetah is big, very big. So in Shmaita Aleph, at the end of Perek Yud Beis, again, if we have time, Belineta will photocopy, we'll go through it. He writes the following, and this is more or less what the Sidrei Torah says as well. He rejects the premise of the Zichron Yosef. He claims that he has a Tosfos in Masechet Bava Kamma, which explicitly contradicts this premise. If you want to make a note of it again, these are just for today's shiur, we're just touching on various sources. The Tosfos is in Bava Kamma, Daf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, Dibra Maschil, Dien Miktas. Again, if somebody has a Bava Kamma, I'll just show you exactly which lines you should focus on. And Tosfos talks about a case of a Suffolk Shilya. In other words, we don't know if she's Tmei Leida or she's not Tmei Leida. There are all sorts of, you know, halachas, intricate halachas about what stage in the development of the embryo was, whether it's Metame, you know, Betumas Leida or not. And Tosfos says, Lechora, if you have a Suffolk Shilya, it has to do with an OL, and, you know, if it's, let's say it was rented out to a non-Jewish woman, and when they hid their shilyas there after they were embarrassed about the fact that they had a miscarriage, so forth and so on, also Gedarten. And Tosfos says he doesn't understand. Why is the Gemara dealing there with all the dinim of roves and chazakas and this and that? After all, it's a Suffolk Tumah Bershus Hayachin. And therefore we should say that tumas leido, like any other tumor, should be suffik tumor, should say yochit sveka tomet. So Tosfos answers, v'yesh lomar, dishmaitin airi le'inyon li'osra le'baywa. Fascinating. Tosfos says that there are two dimensions to the law of leido, of tumas leido. One is tumor in the classical sense, right? Somebody who contracts tumor is not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, is not allowed to touch kodshim. And there's another dimension to Tumas Leida. And that has to do with La'osra La'baila. You know, she's going to have Yimei Tuma, and then Yimei Dam Toar, and so forth, and so on, so on. And it came the whole nine yards. So Tosfos says, Yeshlomo Deshmaitin Ayri, the subject of our Sugya Bava Kamma, is Le'inyon Li'osra La'baila. And Le'inyon Li'osra La'baila Ein Zeh Toli Birashuyos. In other words, Tosfos says that when you look at Leda, or for that matter, Nida, that's the equation of the Shev Shmaitetah, and I don't see any reason to question that equation, right? We're talking about a Tumah, which in addition to the classical definition and repercussions of Tumah, has a very unique status. We're talking about an Isur Labayla, whether it's in the case of Leda, she's, you know, the Oledes is Asur Labayla, whether it's the case of Nida, Zava, all these cases. In addition, above and beyond the classical Tumah issue, there's another dimension, namely Tumah Isur Labayla. Tosfos is making, according to Shev Shmaitetah, the following premise. That what dimension of Tumah do we derive from Sota, and we determine the Suffolk Bai, Rish Sayach, Rish Sarabim, that's only with regard to classical Tumah. Call it Beis HaMikdash Tumah. However, with regard to the Isur Labayla, the Isur Labayla is a separate entity, and it's not governed at all or derived from the halachas of Tumah in general, Rishuyos. And therefore, we're going to apply the normal principles of Safek to be machriya the suffik with robes and svekspekins, etc., etc., with regard to labailah. Wait, just one second. Let me see if now I can make, you know, now we can go back to the Zichron Yosef. Just for a second. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my whole train of thought. Comes along the Shev Shmaitita, and he says, therefore, the Zichron Yosef is incorrect. The Zichron Yosef was operating with the premise that in a case where we don't know whether she stops singing Hefsika Liros or Lo Hefsika Liros, that suffix should be determined by the classical principles that operate with regard to Tuma, universal Tuma, and therefore we should see Achon should be Sveiko Tame. And not only Sveiko Tame, but Midin Vadai, and that we derive from Sulpa. Comes along the Shev Shmaita, and he says there's a very big boo-boo over here. There's a very big mistake in the very premise of the Sidrei Tara. When we're talking about the case of a woman who's a Safik Nida, Safik Zava, did she stop singing, did she not stop singing, and she can be Tovelas, she cannot be Tovelas, that issue is an issue of Nida Labaila. Similar to the case of Leida Labaila, which Tosfos says is not determined by the halachas of Tuma in general, but rather is determined by the halachas of Isurim in general. You have a Safik Erva, a Safik Isur Erva, or a Safik Isur Nida, whatever it might be. So what does the Torah say about Safik Isur? I don't know if this meat is kosher, it's not kosher. Tosfos says, the Torah tells me to rely on Rov, the Torah tells me to rely on Svek Sveka. Those are the laws that will determine Nida. And Rabosa, I always say this, and this is further proof to my claim. I have this big claim that there was brisket Torah before Reb Chaim. Maybe it wasn't as methodological as Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was very demanding, but Reb Chaim did not discover America. I love Reb Chaim, and he's great. But even before Reb Chaim, this Chiddush of the Ktzos, which is echoed in the words of the Sidrei Tara, is classical brisket Torah. This is Tvei Dinim. You talk about Tumas Nida, you have to divide Tumas Nida into two distinct dimensions. There's Tumas Nida Mihilchas Tuma, which is Nogeta Kachim, and then there's Hilchas Nida Bitoras Isur and Arias. And that's a separate entity independent of Tumas Nida. And therefore, the nafkamina is going to be whether Rishuyos will determine Sveikas or not. If you're dealing with the entity, the dimension of Tumas Nida as a Tuma, and you want to know whether she can eat Kodshim, whether she can go to the Migdash, then Enochinami. Where did the Sofik come to fore? But for the Zichron Yosef to go a step further and apply the principle of Sofik to Rishu Sayyot and Sveikotome to the question of Labaila, we're not dealing with the Tuma dimension, we're dealing with the Iser dimension, with the Erva of Anida. Again, I don't know if Anida is an Erva or not, I'm not going into that, but I'm just using that Lasabra Sa'ozen. That question is going to be determined by the laws of Sveikas as we know them and recognize them universally. And therefore, if she has a rove to rely on that she stops seeing, she can go to, count one more day, and if the Yom Zion, go to the mikveh, everything's fine. You want to know about Taharis? Okay, that's a different discussion. But if we're discussing Labaila, and the Zichron Yosef wants to say no, without a Hefsek Taro, we're not going to allow it, is Mehechetes. Go ahead now.
I'm just confused. I mean, this is clearly out of a lack of knowledge, but it doesn't make sense to me. If you, the dinim you learn from Sota don't have to do with being Oser Labala? I mean, what is the whole Indian of Sota about?
Okay, excellent. Excellent. That's going to be one of the counterclaims against the Shem Shmaitita. But let's go slow, okay, because I prepared a logical progression. The Shem Shmaitita at this point quotes Amaram Shif. My father told me that back in his day, when he was a child, Maram Shif and Mar Shah and Maram, these were classics. They were on the table. I was in the Rav Shif for 5 years. I never heard him mention the Mar Shah's name in 5 years. But my father told me, when we learned in Yeshiva, it was Rashi, Tosa, Gemara, Rashi, Tosa, Mar Shah. And I hardly even knew who the Mar Shah was, let alone the Maram Shif. Anyway, so the Shem Shmaitita quotes the Maram Shif. The Maram Shif says the following, and Al, this may sound familiar to you. I don't understand what Tosfos is saying in Masechta Bava Kama Daf Yud Aleph. That's Maram Shif on Tosfos in Bava Kama. He says, I don't get it. Gam Sota Neseres Labailo, Vafilu Hachi, Talidin Sveikasa Birshuyos. Kidin Safek Tuma. I don't get it, says the Maram Shif. How could Tosfos say that the laws of Tumas Leda Labaila are not going to be determined by Sota Rishuyos, because we're talking about Issa Labaila, we're not talking about Tuma? Says the Maram Shif, what do you mean? The laws of Sota are the laws of Issa Labaila. Sound familiar? Says the Shef Shmaitita, I don't accept the Maram Shif. Why not? Okay, now here at Bosai, it gets a little bit sensitive. You know, very subtle. Let's see. You know, I need a special kapitel tillim to see if we can get by this next point of the Shef Shmaitita. Says the Shef Shmaitita, Sota Labaila Asura Mishum Tuma. Okay, this is a gigantic premise. Premise number one. We'll have premise number two in a minute. Again, let's just write this down. Sota Labaila, Asura Labaila, Mishum Tuma. What does that mean, Mishum Tuma? I mean, she didn't touch the sheretz, right? Kirichsiv, Vinitma, Vinitma. Echad Labal, V'Echad Labo. In other words, the Torah went out of its way to label the Iser Labaila of Sota as Tuma Labaila. And what the Torah meant to say was, says the Shef Shmaitita, that we deal with Sota not as a general Iser. It could have said V'Asura, V'Asura, V'Nesra, V'Nesra. That doesn't say. It says V'Nitma, V'Nitma, to teach me that somehow, again, this is metaphysical, what happened to a Sota when she did what she did, you know, illegally, is she became Tmeah. Again, it's a different kind of a Tuma in that sense, but it's Tuma nevertheless. Masha Enke Nida, he says, Eno Klal Mishum Tuma. Oh, this is a heavy premise, even more far-reaching than the first premise. He says, Nida labayla eino bechlal, eino klal mishum tuma, ela kishar arayos, vizebar. Wasn't so bar to me, but to the Shef Shmaitita, this was bar.
It seems like the hefet is bar.
In any event, that's what I can tell you from the Shef Shmaitita, and again, as I said at the outset, we'd have to really spend a lot of time going through the actual text of the Shef Shmaitita to see if we can somehow, you know, today it's almost in style to write a pirush on the Shef Shmaitita. There are like dozens of them, you know. You just go to a library, just pull out Shef Shmaitita with, you know, they usually have one line of the Shef Shmaitita on top, and the rest of the page is the horrors of, you know, Rav Erich, what's his name, Rav Lapian, you know, and all the others, you know, the greats. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has one. Rav Zhivotrovsky, if you ever heard of him, he was a Rebbe in my day in Shalavim. Once a week he used to teach Shalavim. A real Yerushalmi. And it just goes on and on. Okay. Now, what we have to point out is the following. Well before the Shef Shmaitita came the Noda Yehuda, and I always tell you what a great gadol he was. So this Noda Yehuda says the following. Now you know in Noda Yehuda, if you want to make a note of it, there's what's called Madura Tinyana and Madura Basra. So we're talking about the Noda Yehuda Tinyana, and if you want to make a note of it, you'll find this in Siman Kuf Chaf 120. That's a good number. In, of course, Chelik Yeridin. And he writes the following. He says that as far as Nevela is concerned, we have halacha that, let's say, a person in Rishus HaRabim, like there was a carcass of an animal in Rishus HaRabim, and he doesn't know if he touched it or he didn't touch it. So the halacha is Safik Tuma Rishus HaYochid Sveikotar. So this man, he doesn't know. Did I say Rishus HaRabim? I meant to say Rishus HaRabim. That is correct, whatever I said. I always get confused in those things. You know, when I talk about the Ovis, forget it. I always get the three Ovis mixed up. Especially when you had Esav and okay. So what happens now? I don't know if I had, if I came into contact with a nevela. Can I go into the Beis Hamikdash? The answer is, if the nevela is in Rishus HaRabim, I'm allowed to go into the Beis Hamikdash. So the note of you that asks the following question, can I eat this?
With the nevela?
Well, again, so I gave you a case where it was a Vadi nevela, and I don't know if he touched it. So that was a mistake on my part. Let's say I have a Suffolk nevela. No, I don't know if it was shechted or it wasn't shechted. And I definitely touched it. So can I go into the Beis Hamikdash? If it was in Rosh Hashanah?
Yes.
Can I eat it?
No.
Says no to Yehuda. Wait a minute. If you're telling me that since you have a Rosh Hashanah situation, therefore you can be makriya the Suffolk based on the clone of Suffolk Tuma, Rosh Hashanah is fake Tar, so why can't I eat the meat? The Nodav Yehuda was a great pedagogue. But what he wanted to point out to us is that clearly these are two worlds. One world is the world of Tuma, the other is the world of Isur. So what I'm trying to point out to you, Rabosai, is in this very famous pedagogical move of the Nodav Yehuda, he's already set the framework for the Shev Shmaita to come about a century later with his chiluk, meaning there are tvei dinim here. There's one din of Tuma, there's another din of Isur, and the laws that govern Safek will divide depend upon relative to what? If you are relating to whether he can eat Kodshim or go into the Beis HaMikdash, then the answer is Safek Tuma Tar. But if you're talking about Safek Isur, then Safek Isur is L'chumra. So even though you're determining the same exact Safek, what was the story with this animal? The animal had gestorben and it died for whatever reason, or it was shechted properly, you don't know. So as far as Mikdash is concerned, you're going to tell me that since Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, we assume that it was shechted, and therefore it's not an avela, there's no tumas nevela. But as far as eating it is concerned, the suffix is an avela, we're going to determine that it died without shechita. So, like, you know, if I had a cheder bacher, you know, who was 5 years old in front of me, you'd say, Tati, it doesn't make sense what you say. Just be consistent. Was the animal shechted or did it die a natural death? You know, like, you can't tell me. In Hebrew we say, if shal tfos tachel mishnei ktavot, you know, decide one way or the other. And apparently we can split it, says the Nodav Yehuda. So the pedagogy here of the Nodav Yehuda, you can hear it. You know, he's talking to this young child. He's trying to, you know, introduce him, orient him into halachic thinking, that there is such a thing as a halachic theory of relativity before Albert Einstein. And the Shev Shmaita wants to say that when we learn the laws of Nida, the Zichron Yosef made a big boo-boo by equating the laws of Tumas Nida with the laws of Isur Nida Labayla, and the twain shall never meet. Again, this is the Chiddush of the Shev Shmaitita, not of the Nodav Yehuda. You know, I cannot accuse the Nodav Yehuda.
But that's just telling you that there are two dinim in this. That's right. The problem with the Shev Shmaitita is he picked the wrong din for the wrong thing. He's saying the whole Indian of Isur Labayla by a sota is tula, and not that it's not an Indian of Isur, and that's the whole contention. No, you don't have to argue with the fact that there are tzvei dinim. There's an Indian of Isur, but you got to pick the right one for the right one.
Al, I just beg to differ you about one point. Yeah. When you say the right one for the right one, again, if you're talking about whether or not this woman could go into the Beis HaMikdash or not, clearly, I mean, there's no doubt about it, the Shev Shmaita would insist, and we can't doubt this premise, that she is determined by Meshuyos.
Right.
Meaning, if her suffix was in Meshus HaYochid, then absolutely not, she cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
The Chiddush of the Shev Shmaita is that doesn't necessarily determine whether she is a need or not need, as far as Baila is concerned, because with regard to Baila, we're dealing with a classical Isur or Erva, and therefore for the determining rules of Sfeikas that apply here are going to be the Sfeikas of Isur and Baila. You have a Kasha from Sota. So he says Sota is only going to be the basis for these new dinim of Rosh Sayyak, Rosh Sarabim, because of the Torah
of Tuma,
calling it, you know, Tuma. That's what he wants.
Okay.
Can she go to the base of Mikdash? That's Sota.
What do you say?
Can the Sotah go into the Beis HaMikdash?
No. Yeah, yeah, that's not too much in that sense, right?
She
yeah.
can go in.
Right. Well, that far we're not going to go.
Why is she, the, why is she not telling me? Why? This is the Shusa Yochid.
No, I'm just saying that she didn't touch a sheret. So
right.
She,
no, but she's the whole process.
Right, right. Again, the it's only tumah in order to teach me the halacha of safik v'shus hayachid sveiko tameh. In other words, we see sota as sort of a springboard to enter into the world of tumah, but it doesn't mean that the sota itself is tameh. Or if I touch the sota, I contract tumah. Oh, so now the Sidrei Tara asks the following question. He says, "Wait a second." He says, if you're going to tell me that Nida is Asura Labaila Kishar Arayas, I don't want to get emotional here, but just sometimes I get overwhelmed by, it's a terrible Nida, I don't know, I get overwhelmed. He says, if you're going to say that Nida is Asura Labaila Kishar Arayas, Heichan Matsidu Behilchus Iser Erva, Sha'isur pak ali de tefillah b'mikvah. It brings me to tears because it's such a basic question. Where did you find that someone who has an isur or an erva could jump into a mikvah and remove the isur and the erva? El al korcha al korchenu sha'isur mikorcha tuma. The im tavla v'paka tuma so is memela paka isure erva.
That's a tremendous.
I mean, my gosh! If there's such if there's anything called a teiku, and this is a teiku, and we're back to the Zichron Yosef, which, as I told you, my agenda is to reject the Zichron Yosef. But you know, you got me by the gargle here. You can't tell me that the Iser Erva of Nida is your classical Iser Erva. We never ever found. We never encountered a heter for an Iser Erva by Tefillah B'Mikvah. Obviously, what engenders the Iser Labayla is Tumah. So first determine the halachas in Tumah, and then I'll know whether she's Asur or not. And if in Hilchas Tumah, as the Zichron Yosef insists, it's a Safi Turish Seyachid, don't tell me that, well, she has robes, and she has dust, and yetz, and derech klal, and regulus, and all that. Forget about all that. It's a classical Safi Turish Seyachid. If you determine that she's Tmeah, Midin, Safik Tumah Shusay Yochid, then Memela she's Asur Erva. If you remove the Tumah, then you remove the Isur Erva. The Isur Erva is not an independent entity.
But again, going back to the simple basics again, I'm sorry to ask this question, but yeah. But if we say that Sota is a din of Erva, if it's a din of Erva, then how is Sota allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash?
Again, Alan, leave out Sota. I'll tell you why. Sota is just a stepping stone to teach me. This is part of the what we call the halacha of Moshe Sinai that we can establish based on the fact that the Torah calls Sota Tmeah Tmeah, that in any case of real genuine tumah, a suffix is Tamei Birshu Sayyuch. That's just the Yalfusa.
I understand that, but the fact is, if she
Alan, I can't. Let me just try to move on. You'll have to learn to live with your questions a little bit. Okay. So who's going to try to put this all together in the post-Shev Shmaitita period of time? Many of you, I'm sure, have heard of the Shari Yosher. Who wrote the Shari Yosher? Reb Shimon Shkrob. Now, let's not be cynical. You know, there were those who used to say, oh, Shkop, Trump, you know, and all that stuff. We don't hold by that. Reb Shimon Shkop was a great Rosh Hashiva. Again, the only chisaron that he had was he learned in Telz. But other than that, we could be Michael him. And he was very close to Reb Chaim, and he was very influenced by Reb Chaim. His brother lives in Toronto? He can't be alive today. Reb Shimon Shkop has gone a while.
Big teacher.
Yeah, his son-in-law is Rabbi Epstein, you know, who's a chemist, the brilliant Rosh Hashiva. Anyway, so now comes the Shari Yosha. Okay? And this, Ribosai, is the most difficult point of the whole Shia. I'm just going to present to you what he says, and we'll try to understand it. Okay? Says the Shari Yosha. He says, it's true, I cannot deny it, that the Isur Nida depends upon Tumah. But however, there's a fundamental difference between Nida and all other Tumas. He says, when the Torah says that a Tomei is not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash or eat Kodshim, he says that the mess that we think he came in contact with, or the Sheretz that he came in contact with, that doesn't cause the Iser. It's not inherent in the Sheretz or in the mess. It's that contact with the mess creates tumah, and the tumah itself, once it's contracted, prevents you, that's a bad word, prohibits you from entering into the Mikdash or eating kodshim. So again, the first premise, the first chiddush of Rav Shimon Shkop, is that there's a two-stage process. There's stage number one, called the sheretz or the mess, in which a person came in contact with the sheretz or the mess. Stage number two is, as a result of the contact with the sheretz or the mess, he contracts tumah. And now leave out the sheretz and the mess. That's already ancient history. Well, what interests now is the fact that he himself has contracted tumah. That tumah inhibits him from entering into the Beis HaMikdash. I'm not even halfway through, so give me a little time. Oh, he says the following. Came the chalal of tumah, memela asur b'knisa lebeis hamikdash. Avol nida o yoledes. Again, we had the sugya of the Tosfos over there in Bava Kama Daf Yud Aleph. He says, etzem hari'ia vehaleda garmim es ha'isur. She calls man shelo titoher mitum asa asura. She nefcha al yidei hari'ia li erva kol od shehi bitum asa. This is.
Read it again.
Yeah, we're going to have to read it about 50 times here.
You used out the word tumah to be. Read it again.
Yeah, let me read it again. He says the following: Avol nida v'yoledes etzem hari'ia v'haleda garmim es ha'isur.
Stop there.
Yeah.
Garmim es ha'tuma.
Okay, garmim es ha'tuma. You're right, but what he's pointing out here is forget about her. Yeah. You're right that if she wants to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, then your formulation would be precise. Gormim es hatuma. But we want to know if she's Asura Labaila. So he says the following. Her Isa Labaila is not a two-stage process. It's not that she contracts tuma, and as a result of the tuma, she's Asura Labaila.
Right.
He's rejecting that definition.
It's two different things, a tuma and an Isra.
Correct. So he's saying the following, that... Again, I'm adding a lot of words, but I think what he's saying is that if you want to know why she can't go into Migdash, then you're right. That's a classical case where the Re'iyah generates a Tumah, and she can't go into the Migdash because she has contracted Tumah. That's the two-stage process. However, if you're dealing with the Isur of Nida, then he says something else. He says it's not a two-stage process, but Etzem HaRe'iyah VeHaLeda Garmim Es HaIsur. And what does that mean? The way the Torah creates this Isur is the following way. Kol zman shelo titoyer mitum asa, asurahi, mishum shenefeches li erva al yidei hari'iyah. So again, if you ask me what creates the Isur erva, the answer is the ri'iyah itself. If you ask me how does she get out of that erva, the answer is that depends upon tumah. Is called Ochehi Bitum Asa, as long as she's Tmeya. It's almost like there's a second condition that's riding here. You know, it's imagine two airplanes. You know, one is a larger airplane, or in fish, you know, you have the largest fish and then the symbiotic fish, you know, that hitches a ride over here. So there's another element here that's attached to the Re'iya and the later that engenders the Isa Labaila, and that is Tuma. And what does that element of tumah do? What does it accomplish? Why is it so significant? Calls manchalo titoyer mitumasa. Again, tumasa is an entity which generated an Easter knisel of migdash. Asura, she's asura labaila. As long as she remains in the state of tumah, then that erva, which was engendered by leda, continues to engender an Isur. Shenefeches al yidei hara'iyo le'erva kol zman shehi betumasa. Ukshenitheres mitumasa poka ha'isur shechal al yidei hara'iyo o ha'leda. She'ein ha'din shebe'etzem ha'isha t'mea v'lacheni asura b'bi'o l'baylo el ha'ra'iyo v'aleda yotzeres etzla isur l'baylo chutz mimashi yotzeres tumo. So it comes out like this. According to Rav Shimon Shkab, the leda or the ra'iyo engenders two things, but one thing is dependent upon the other. Let's try to understand. He says that on the one hand, the ra'iyya engenders tumah. On the other hand, the ra'iyya itself inherently creates an erva. However, what the Torah says now is that as long as A exists, B exists. Again, they were created independently. You know, the two arrows here that were shot out from the ra'iyya. The ra'iyya engenders tumah. And it engenders an Isur Erva. That came from the Re'iyah. However, there's one fundamental difference. That the Chiddush is that once the arrow of Re'iyah engendered Tumah, then that Tumah forces, so to speak, or gives life to the Isur Erva. When that Tumah terminates, then the Isur Erva terminates. So that really the relationship here between Tumah and Erva is only as far as Hafkas or Heter Iser Erva is concerned. That's where the Tumah plays a major role. Tumah was engendered as an independent entity. Erva was engendered as an independent entity. For that Erva, you don't need the two-stage process. Well, she contracted Tumah, now she's Asur L'Baila. Forget about that. She's not Asur L'Baila because of Tumah as a second stage. She's Asur L'Baila because she had a Rias Nida. However, the Torah says that that state of Erva, which was engendered by Re'iyah, a Re'iyah which also at the same time simultaneously engendered Tumah, depends upon the Tumah situation. And the Erva continues, Asha Titoir Mitumasa. Once she's mitaheres es atzma mitumah, so it's memelu the erva is paka. So again, are we dealing with a relationship in which A causes B, namely the Isur Erva, is a result of A of tumah? Well, the answer is yes and no. It becomes very complex. On the one hand, the answer is a flat no, because I don't need the two-stage process of re'iyah engendering tumah, and therefore, as a result, she becomes an Isur Erva l'bayil. I don't need that. The Re'iyah itself engenders an Isur L'Baila. But the answer to that original question is also a flat yes, paradoxically. It's A and not A at the same time. Because yes, the Isur Erva is very much determined and dependent upon the Isur Tumah. In what sense? That unlike any other Isur Erva, right, you can't take a nevela and put it into the mikvah. That's not going to be matter the achilas nevela. Once nevela in the Nod Yudas paradigm is asura, that's an iser like any other iser in the Torah, and tvila b'mikvah is not going to help you to remove that iser. We all understand that. Yeah. But in the case of Erev, there's a unique situation that because that very re'iyah engendered tumah, the Torah told me a tflut, which I guess in English is called an interdependence, that the erva isur, which is also generated at the same time by the re'iyah, is dependent upon the tumah. Which means what? As long as the tumah is there, she's asura b'taras erva, but as a result of this re'iyah, when we remove that tumah, then the mela, the isur erva, is removed.
And I
just want to say this, that I think what the Shari Yosher is doing here is, in defending the Shem Shmaitata, he's really just rearranging the pieces of the puzzle. In other words, what he's doing is he's working out the mechanics, I call it the physics, of what goes on in the case of an Isur Nida L'Baila. The Nafkamina is going to be, says the Shari Yosher, based on the Shem Shmaitata, is what's going to be in a case of Sofik Tum Rishus HaYachid. Says the Shem Shmaitata, the idea of Rishuyos only applies when the Iser Tuma is the subject of our discussion, if the Iser Erva Levaila is the subject that we're dealing with, then Rishios is not going to have any impact. But again, if you talk about the other issue, which was the issue that the Sidrei Torah raised against the Shem Shemaita, namely, where do we find an Iser Erva or any sort of Iser that's Nitan Lehatir Al Yedei Tfila, the answer is because of the unique relationship between Re'ias Nida as a Metame and Re'ias Nida as a Yotzer Ha'erva. So just give me 1 minute to read it again to make sure that I didn't mislead you.
No,
I just want to make sure that I'm reading it properly. He says the following. He says, Shona nida mishar tuma to mituma sha'asali kani sumigdash o achilus kodshim eina mes vasherz gormim adin ela tuma nischadsha. The person becomes tamei eitzah nogeya became the chal of tuma memela osur. Right? So here in Nida, it's not going to be that since Chalaleha Tuma Memela she becomes Asur. No. I can go back to the original source. Right? In the case of all Tumas, as far as Migdash is concerned, I don't go back to the original source. The original source is already out of the picture. You can disqualify, bracket it. What we're interested in is the result and the impact of the original source, in which case that it generated Tuma, and now the Tame that touched this Tuma, the Tuma cannot go into Migdash. Not so in the case of Nida. In the case of Nida, it's not that the Tuma that resulted from the Re'ia is what generates an Isa Labaila, but the Re'ia itself, the Leda itself, is what engenders the Isa. However, he says, there is a relationship. We cannot sever the relationship between the Erva and the Isa relationship, the Isa element of Re'ia and the Tuma element of Re'ia. They are interdependent. In what sense? Calls man shaloti toyer mitum asa adayin asura shenefeches al yidei Re'ia li erva calls man shehi betum asa aval kshenet heres mitum asa poka ha'isa lebaila shechal al yidei ha're'ia o al yidei ha'leda. She'ein din bi'etzem ha'isha sha'isha t'mei asura b'biyo. That's not what we're saying. Again, that's what we're saying with regard to Knisa l'migdash, that the tumah itself generates the iser l'migdash. Here we're saying it's not the tumah that asas ha'l'baila. Rak mashe ha're'iyo yotzeres etzla iser l'baila. Chutz mi yitziras ha'tumah. So the re'iyo creates two different things, but the Torah says that now one of the two that was created is dependent upon the other, and the Isa Labaila now depends upon the Tuma. If the Tuma continues, the Isa continues. If the Tuma terminates, i.e. through Tefillah, then the Isa Labaila terminates as well. Whoa. I feel like, you know, I have to take a vacation to Florida after this. My brain is like, you know, bursting from the depths of his
comments. Number one,
yeah.
the what he said, it sounds very logical. It sounds very good, actually. Except you have to.
I think I'm going to write a letter to the Rav Shimon Shkaf.
Okay, you know, but I think he's wrong.
Dr. Kermel.
I think he's wrong.
Ripped up the letter.
Okay, so yeah, that's right.
I didn't send it in the mail. It's a special delivery. It's a long.
The easy part, just what Bamer is that you have to include it as part of his theory is that the Iser Tuma. Generate. I'm sorry. The Easter itself, you know, the erva generates the tuma, and the tuma keeps the erva going, so to speak. That's what he's saying.
I don't know if he goes as far as to say that the erva generates the tuma. I don't know if he's saying.
Well, Re'ia generates.
You know, it's Re'ia.
But the Re'ia, I'm equating the Re'ia with the erva, but you don't have to do that. But
right.
The point. What I'm saying is, but the secondary Iser of Arayus does not keep generating the tumah again. So in other words, the secondary that does not, because otherwise you get into a, you can never get out of it. Because even though she's Tovelas, she would still then it would be secondary.
I get a little nervous. You know, sometimes I don't like the lingo. It's not secondary. Again, there are two equal primary results of the re'iyah. One is tumah, and that impacts on general dinim of tumah as far as migdash.
Right.
And there's another primary, not a secondary implication here, that the yitzira, that the re'iyah itself is yotzeres.
Yeah, but now the re'iyah is gone.
Alan, do me a favor. Yeah. If you don't mind holding your questions for another few minutes, so that we can get the whole picture. Okay, fine.
I didn't get to the
front. Okay, there's plenty of time, Alan. You know, Minchas at 1:15. It's now 10 to 1. But I want to let you out before it gets too late. So let me see if I can just round it off. Okay. So the Shariyosha says the following: whatever is relevant to Tumah and Tara, namely Migdash and Kodshim, that's going to be derived from Sota, from the word Tumah in Sota. And therefore, if it were a Sofek Tumah Bershus HaYochid, then Tmeah Bevada. Avol Mashino Gea Le'isur Shenolad Al Yidei HaRe'iyah Le'baila Sham Donim Dine Sfekis Kechol Shar Isure Erva Velo Nidon Kevadai Bershus HaYochid. So the Shari Yosher, again, we still have another major chiddush of the Shari Yosher, but at this point the Shari Yosher says, therefore, the upshot of everything we've been discussing is that when you deal with Tuma Vitara, as far as need is concerned, then you're going to derive from Sota those laws that govern Tuma and Tara universally, and therefore Sofek Bishus HaYochid is Tmeya Vitara's Vada, and she can't go into the Migdash. But when you're determining her status vis-a-vis her Baal, namely the Iser Erva that was generated by the Re'iyas Nida, here we govern that Iser Erva in the same identical way that we govern all Sfekis in all Isuri Erva, and therefore Rishus HaYochid is not going to engender a Din Iser Vadai. Okay, now he goes on and he says something else. He says, V'od, Afilu im ha'iser novea me'atuma, even if you'll reject every premise that I've built up here, and you insist that the iser le baila is a result of tuma, again, that's not his position, but he wants to show you that I can reach out even if you're not on board so far. He says, nevertheless, there's a chiluk, there's a hevdil between nida and shar tumas. And he says the following: the tuma chutz mi hachalos he mitzius shal tuma mamish shekayemis. He says that with regard to general tuma, not iser labaila, but general tuma, that he says there are two dimensions here. There's number one, the chalos tuma, that's the halachic entity. And there's also a mitzius of tuma that exists. Okay, tuma is something that's almost tangible. And he says the following: Begeder ha'isra likanes lemigdash olechol kodshim. He says, or contacting with taros. He says, in that context, there's something called a mitzius of tuma. Aval inyan iser bia iser labayla ain't a mitzius shel tuma rak hachalos din erva shenovea me'atuma hi she'oseres. So again, just to summarize what he said so far, and then we'll see the nafkamina, the repercussion here. He says the following: that in the case of Beis HaMikdash, what we're dealing with is not just the chalos tuma, but he says it's a mitzias of tuma. The tuma itself is a reality. He says that the reality of tuma with regard to re'iyas nida or leda is not what generates the isa labayla. It's not that entity or tangible tuma, so to speak, that engenders the isa, but rather there's a din of erva that results from tumah, but that din is not because of the mitzias of tumah, but rather because of the chalushem iser that is engendered by the tumah itself. So again, we're no longer dealing with a physical, tangible reality of tumah. We're dealing with a halachic entity of an isur that was engendered by tumah.
Right.
What's the nafkamina? He says, "Bazeh, with regard to this entity called the chalos isur erva, which again is something that was propelled by the tumah, but is not a mitzias of tumah." Again, the mitzias of tumah is very real and tangible, and it generates an isur lemigdash, but not lebaila. Lebaila is not a result of the mitzias of tumah. The mitzias of tumah has nothing to do with the baal, but rather the isur erva that is engendered by the tumah that's relevant to the baal. Ubazeh ein din vadai. We're not going to apply the principle of Rishus HaYachid creating a din vadai. Derak hanhaga shal arayos shedonim bo dine sfekam. So, you know, the Torah has created, as a result of this tumah, a law of erva, of isa labayla, and that law of erva is regulated by the normal laws, universal laws that govern arayos in general. Now, in order to really clarify what this new hosafa of the Shar Yosher is all about, let's take a look at his conclusion, his nafkamina. He says, ulai, again, leave out the word ulai because it's just going to confuse it. Later on we'll put back the word ulai, but he says, Bituma shel boel nida. Now we know that if a person has relations with a nida, he incurs a tuma of zayin yomim. I think we may have mentioned it in the past. I don't know. Anyway, a boel nida nitma shivas yomim. Oh, I think we mentioned it in our 9 o'clock shiur. Ha boel nida nitma shivas yomim. He says, if you had a case of a safek nida and it was in Rishus HaYachit, okay, so you have a safek nida Rishus HaYachit, so we don't know if she had a Re'ias nida or she didn't have a Re'ias nida, and now someone was boel her, he says the following: since it's Rishus HaYachit, therefore, he's tamei tuma shiva b'toras vada. Why? Ki zeu din midine hatuma she'oleha. Okay, let's try to understand this. In the first pshat of the Shar Yosher, the re'ia or leda itself inherently engenders all the surei erva. And therefore the din of Baal Leha is also in that category and is an offshoot or an impact, a result of the Isurei Erv, and will be determined by the laws that govern Arayos or Isurim in general. But in the second pshat of the Shari Yosher, it's the Tuma that engenders the Isur Erva, not the Metzias of Tuma, but the Chalushem Tuma generates a Chalos Isur Nida. And now, if you ask about a boel nida, you're talking about the halach of a boel nida b'toras tuma. In other words, now you're going back to basics. I mean, the boel nida is tar in and of itself. But the Torah is going to say that as a result of this be'ila, he has a contact with tumas nida. That already will be determined and governed by the laws of tuma, which, at the root of it all, at the source of it all, engender the Iser Erva Levaila. So when we talk about the Boel Nida, then we're going back to the Tuma element, that we want to know if the Boel Nida contracted Tuma. Is he Tomei for Shivas Yom, or is he not? So all those kinds of Sfeikas will be determined by the Rishrios. And if it happened in Rishus HaYachid, he's Tomei Shivas Yomim, Bitoras Tumas Nida as a Boel, Bitoras Vadai as a Vadai. But that's only in the second interpretation of the Shari Yosher. Namely, if you insist that even the Iser Erva is engendered by the Tumah, then you start with Tumah, And in a boil nida, you want to know whether he contracted that tumah, and therefore it's determined by Rishus HaYochid. And Petoris Vada, he's also, he's Tomei Shivus Yomim. Mashenki, if you go back to the original pshat of the Shari Yosher, that the Leda or the Ria independently generates an Iser of Erevah, and it's not a result of Tumah, then the law of Boel Nida fits into the law of an Iser Be'ilas Nida, and the Tumah is a result of the violation of the Iser Nida. You're going back to the source in the Iser case, and therefore the Iser and Tzvekas will be determined by the universal halachas that govern Iser. Now, Rabosai, I'm going to have to let you go because the hour is late, but I just want to tell you that we didn't get to the rush, which is okay. I mean, I'm a little upset about that, but it's okay.
There's no rush.
But there's no rush. Rush through the Ryan and Ryan through the rip through the rush and all that. But I just want to tell you what you might want to look at for next time. And this is going to directly relate to our discussion today. I would call it an outgrowth of our discussion today. So today we lay down the fundamentals. What is the issue of the rush? The rush on the bottom of the right column, if you have a copy of the rush, this is the rush at the very beginning of the fourth perek of Nida. So about four lines up before the end of the right column, he quotes a Ravid. A Tshuvas HaRavid. And the Ravid is going to himself, I think, postulate that the laws of Nida, he happens to be talking about a Zava, split, they bifurcate into two directions. One is the laws of Tumah V'Tahara, and the other is as far as the laws of Iser Labayla is concerned. And then Afkamina is going to be the case of Poletes Shichva Zara. Because when a woman is counting Zayin Nikiyim, if she had Tashmish, and therefore she's Poletes Shichva Zara, that Zara is Metami her in the same way that a Keri of Al-Keri is Metami. Or let's say you have a Zav who's counting Zayin Nikiyim and he has Keri. So that Keri is Metami him. Says the Raivu, that Keri, or in this case, that Zera, Shichva Zara, that she's Poletes, is only Metame Har Litaros for any contact she has with Truma, etc., etc., or if she wants to enter into the base Hamikdash. Ava Labaila, as far as the din of Isur Zava Labaila, shall we say that the Shichva Zara is a Tuma which now undermines and vitiates the entire Sofra love Zayin Nikiyim, that's what we call stira, such that if a woman sees Aria's dam in the middle of Zayin Nikiyim, she has to start from the beginning, start from scratch, because Riyas dam is so seres as called Zayin Nikiyim. Says the Ravid, that Aloch does not apply to Poletes Shichva Zora. And therefore, she still could count the Zayin Nikiyim, and she's Muteris Labayla, despite the fact that she had Tashmish. Again, she wasn't supposed to, but she had Tashmish. She was Poleta Shichva Zara, because the Poleta Shichva Zara is only Halacha in Tumah, as far as Tumah is concerned, but not Halacha as far as Baila is concerned. And on this tshuva of the Ravid, the Rush writes, Dvarav Tmuim, Heich Tistar Lichatzoim, at the end of that column. You should underline those words, Heich Tistar Lichatzoim. You can't split it down to the Mimanasha. If you're telling me that Pleita Shifa Zora is Metamiar, then Mimela she's Asura Levaila. If you're telling me that Pleita Shifa Zora does not engender an Isura Levaila, then she shouldn't be Tmea as well. We know that she's Tmea. So how can you possibly say that this day on which she was Poletus is Ola Liyamei Sfira Salabaila, and therefore she's Tahora L'Shamesh L'Tashmish, and yet she's Asura L'Taros Ula Kodesh Ula Migdash? But Rabosei, I think, that we can intelligently say that the Ravid is really the forerunner, if there is such a word, the harbinger of the Sidrei Tara, the Shev Shmaitita, and the Shari Yosher, that with regard to Re'iyah, there are two dinim that are generated by that Re'iyah. One din is L'tumah V'tara, the other din is L'baila, and they don't necessarily, you know, with the rule of never the twain shall meet, you know, the twain doesn't necessarily have to meet, and it doesn't have to be a coincidence of both, and it could be that you can have a Re'iyah, in this case, Poleta Shefazora, which as far as Tumah V'Tara is concerned is Metamiyar, but as far as Labaila is concerned, it's not Metamiyar at all. It doesn't even register at all on the rectus scale. Only a Riyas Dam would be a problem for Zayin Nikim, but not Shikva Zora. So this Ravid, and the Machlokas between the Rosh and the Ravid, is going to be very relevant in Ritz Hashem to have discussion. You know, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein has a very fascinating tshuva about a woman who can't get pregnant unless she has what's called Hazra'a Malachutit, artificial insemination. And the doctors want her, because of her cycle, to increase the probability of becoming pregnant. They would like to do the Hazra'a Malachutit on Yom Zion of Zion Nikim. And not only that, they wanted to have Tashmish immediately after the Hazra'a Malachutit, because the two together will up the ante on her probability of getting pregnant. Now, this is a problem, because after the Hazra'a Malachutit, if she has Tashmish, she's going to be a Poleta Shechva Zera, and a Poleta Shechva Zera is going to undermine the Zayin Nikim. So if that be the case, how can she have Tashmish with her husband? And this is what Rav Moshe wants to deal with. Okay, believe that. I mean, that's already gave you just to keep you excited, you know, gave you a little bit of a preview of coming attractions. Okay, Shkoyach, we'll end. Yeah, now you have me for the next 10 minutes until midnight.